It has been 104 days since I recorded an episode of the podcast. So, of course, I want to begin this new episode with a quote from a podcast favorite philosopher, one of my favorite humans ever, Rumi. And he has a great quote about silence. "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Welcome to the Alchemical Mind." This year has been a rather interesting one for me, and I'm sure it has been an interesting one for many of you as well. Things are sort of returning back to normal, and I've had a lot of things to say about my return to normal this past year. Now, I went through a lot of stuff at the beginning of the year. You can go back and listen to not the previous episode, but the one before, to Hell and Back, which will give you kind of a basis for the things that I learned in the first 2 months of 2021. And this is kind of a follow-up to that. 104 days later, I want to talk about my 100 days of silence. And I want to make it clear that just because this episode is once again about silence, seems to be a recurring topic lately, it doesn't mean to say that I haven't talked to people, that I haven't engaged in social media, that I haven't talked to friends, or spoken to my family, or any of these things. What I mean by these 100 days of silence is engaging in true silence, in honest retrospection, in learning to listen to the universe and what that really means. Of course, like in seemingly all the recent episodes that I've done, in no way, shape, or form am I implying that I've reached some sort of level of enlightenment. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in this episode as well. All it means is that I found a place somewhere between this and the other where I finally learned to listen. So let's talk about that. What does it mean to be silent? Again, it doesn't mean not talking to anyone. Over the last several months, I've managed to cleanse up some of the external, I guess we can say, influences that can tend to dominate your life when you're trying to make some sort of quote-unquote informed decision. So as a result, I quit listening to a lot of podcasts that I was listening to. I quit reading as many books. I quit watching as many videos. And instead focused more on things that would be considered more fun, we'll say. Things that you would think that if you are on a journey of self-discovery, you wouldn't want to do. So just watching some fun popcorn flick. I mentioned in the past my love for zombie movies. I've watched a ton of zombie movies over the last several months, and not because I wasn't interested in the more mystical aspects, but more because I felt like some of my interests in finding answers were getting in the way of actually finding those answers and not helping me in finding them at all. To me, this is kind of what Rumi implies when he says, when the soul lies down in the grass, the world is too full to talk about. Because you can get to this place where you are sitting in the grass and you realize the insignificance of many of the things that you partake in on a day-to-day basis. The discussions on Twitter about this magic or that magic, or this philosophy or that philosophy. Whether UAPs are real or not, whether there's aliens here or not, whether psychedelics are useful or not, whether Buddhism is the way, or Taoism, or Christianity, or Islam, or any other philosophy. Because none of that matters when you lay down the grass and listen. This, of course, is a callback to the concept of Wu Wei that we've discussed quite a bit in length over the past, we'll say, year. And again, I'll say year because there's only been, this will be the third episode of 2021, and it's now nearly halfway through the year. But it's a concept that I dove into quite a bit in the latter half of last year, the philosophy of Wu Wei, of inaction. And of course, that doesn't mean not doing anything, not being slothful. That's not what it means. Just like partaking in silence doesn't mean literally taking a vow of silence. and going into the woods and not talking to anyone. Not that that's not useful. Of course it's useful. I've done a couple of episodes on my own personal experiences diving into nature fully for days, sometimes a week or so at a time. And the amount of information you can learn about yourself by detaching yourself from the world around you. If you're familiar with the story of the 10 ox herding pictures, a wonderful Buddhist story that I've mentioned many, many times on the podcast as well, you may be familiar with the concept that I'm talking about. Because as you go on the hunt for the ox, which of course is a metaphor for the idea of reaching enlightenment, eventually you get to a place where you realize that there is no ox to find. And when you begin to realize that, you begin to realize there's also no self to find that ox. And the ox and you become one. This is the true meaning of finding silence, of being able to dive deep into the world without necessarily becoming a part of it. Of course, if you live in modern society, unless you've become a monk or something, or you've decided to go into the woods and spend your life as a hermit, in which case chances are you're probably not listening to this podcast. You must find a way to make your own existence, to find meaning in a world that is ultimately meaningless. And see, this is kind of what lies at the crux of the dilemma. This is kind of one of the hard problems of philosophy, of achieving self-fulfillment. Is that because there are so many gurus on podcasts and YouTube and in books and Twitter and elsewhere, you might seem to think that, hey, this person's got it together. This person knows what's going on. What are they doing that I'm not doing? How are they able to find the answers when I've been searching for so long and I'm still completely lost? And see, this gives you some kind of sense of existential crisis, as they say. But see, you're being fooled because there is no existential crisis. You're allowing yourself to believe in this false idea that there is some sort of meaning to it. And because you don't know what it is, you feel like you're missing out. FOMO is a term that's used nowadays, fear of missing out. FOMO, do you have FOMO? Everyone's got FOMO nowadays. You get on Twitter, everyone's got FOMO. I'm very interested in cryptocurrency, for example, and lately there's been a lot of FOMO going on in crypto because prices crash and people are freaking out. What does this mean? I just lost all my money. I put my last paycheck into such and such crypto, and now I'm broke. And see, the reason that happened is not because you are actually broke. But because things didn't go your way, you've become completely lost. That's at the core of a lot of existential crisis. And sure, that might be one of these real-world things involving finances that you're like, what does that have to do anything at all with spirituality? But you see, you're missing the point in that there is no spirituality, in as much as there's no real world either. See, both things are one. You're still thinking in dualities. And that's why you have FOMO. You feel like you're going to miss out on the next big investment, on the next great job, on the next great partner, on children and fortunes, of fame, of Twitter followers, of a podcast audience. You feel like you're missing out because somebody else has that and you don't. So you see, if you're embarking on this spiritual journey and that's the way that you feel, even if you don't realize that that's why you feel it, you're missing the point of it all entirely. The spiritual journey isn't about finding some sort of ultimate enlightenment, of being able to return to the Pleroma, of finding your way back to God. That's not what it's about at all. What it's about is in you realizing that none of those things are true. And at the same time, knowing that you've had them all along. That's why it's not true. There's a saying that goes something to the effect of, you can't lose what you never had. And you see, you never had these things because you don't know what these things mean. You don't understand what it's like to experience God, the fullness, in all of its fullness. All you know is what other people tell you you should be thinking. So you're still a slave to that. You're still a slave to this mentality. That's why you're not a full person. Because you've lost the realization that you already are. You were born already complete. And regardless of what other people tell you about what your defects might be, those things don't exist either. If you were born in a culture that decides that it's maybe not okay to be of a particular race or a particular ethnicity or a particular religion or sexual orientation, and you believe that, you already lost. You already lost. You have given up your ability to live as a human being, a full human being, full of potential, full of knowledge of self, knowledge of other, and you've become a slave to someone else's mentality. This is what spirituality is. It's not about finding something that you've lost. It's about finding the realization that you never lost it in the first place. And see, if you go back two episodes ago to the episode To Hell and Back, I dive into this a little bit, into my realization that it wasn't the fact that I didn't believe in God, for example, in the Bethos. It's not that that thing wasn't there. It's that I failed to see that it was there. And for those of you that already had this feeling of, well, of course there is some higher entity out there guiding my path, why have they gone from me? Why have they betrayed me? They never left you. They didn't betray you. To use a Christian metaphor, think about when Jesus was on the cross. What did Jesus say? He didn't say, oh God, why did you leave me all alone? I'm going to die on this cross. These people all hate me. He didn't say any of these things. What did he say? He said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And see, this is the mentality that you need to have. Now, I'm not a Christian. There's many reasons why I don't consider myself a Christian. Doesn't mean that I don't find the words of Jesus, of the Christ, to be unimportant. Of course they're important. Because he was a being that understood. Just like Buddha was a being that understood. Just like Rumi was. Just like many other prophets that have been found throughout human history have realized these important things. And why do they have these cults built around them? Is because they see the truth of these things, whereas normal people like you and I fail to see these things unless we get to a point where we feel like we lose it all. Joseph Campbell's got a great quote talking about this, something to the effect of where you trip, there you'll find your treasure. Because see, while everything is going well, while everything is good, if you're rich, you have a great family, a great life, a great job, a great car, a great house, a great this, a great that, a great the other, all these material things that you might feel are the ultimate importance in life, or, you know, maybe if you're deeply spiritual, maybe you feel like you've achieved some higher level of understanding, even these things aren't important. Because see, then you're still holding on, you're still grasping on to this false world that you're creating based on these words that are either coming out of your mouth or living within your mind. Because see, the brain can't describe all of existence because it's simply a small part of it. And so how can a small part of one thing understand the complexity of its entirety? It can't. All it can understand is its own direct experience. Just like your finger can't understand what it's like to be a hand. Your finger can point at something. Maybe it can grasp a small object, but it can't grasp the entire object, right? If I throw a ball at you and you try to grab it with your finger, what's going to happen? You're probably going to jam your finger, and then you'll drop the ball. If you use one hand, well, now you have five fingers, if you're fortunate enough to have five fingers. And maybe you can grasp the ball unless it's too big. And then what do you do? Well, maybe you need two hands to grasp the ball. Otherwise, you'll drop it. Now, what if you have a ball of infinite dimensions? Will you be able to grasp that ball with your reach? Your hand might be, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 inches long, maybe longer if you're super tall. Your wingspan, right, for the length of your arms from tip to tip might be, Whatever, 5 foot, 5 and a half, 6 foot long, 2 meters, let's say. Okay, I'm 6 foot tall, so it's about 2 meters. Roughly, your wingspan is about your height, so my wingspan is roughly 6 feet or 2 meters. So that means if somebody throws an object at me that's larger than 6 meters, chance or 2 meters, chances are I can't grasp it. So how can I grasp the entirety of the universe within my hands? And see, the same works with your brain, and so your brain has to find a way to understand the world with the minuscule tool set that it has. And for most of us, that minuscule tool set is largely comprised of words and concepts. But if you begin to think about how large infinity is, you have to find ways to demean the entirety of the meaning. And I use that word purposely because demean means to remove meaning. And that's what you're doing. Now, most of us can't figure that out because we live in a world that's very minuscule, right? Our planet is rather small, especially compared to other planets in the solar system, and surely compared to other planets in the universe, but it's very small. And even then, as small as our planet is, most of us have never been to other countries. Maybe if you're in Europe, right, where the continent is relatively small, you've been to several, if not all, or many of the countries there. But if you're, for example, in the United States, as is most of my audience, I guarantee you, most people living in the States have never even been to another country. Now, many people have, of course, but the United States is such a large country that maybe you've gone to different states. But even then, maybe just to one or two bordering states. You may not have traveled cross country. Now, for you, that might seem like a long distance, right? If you travel 3,000 miles across, from New York to California, for example, you might feel like that's a long distance because you might be, let's say, on average, 5 foot 8, right? I don't know what that transcribes to in meters, but let's say 1 3/4 meters, I guess. So now you're traveling tens of thousands of times your size. And so if you're traveling to another planet, say the closest one, we'll go to Mars, and it takes us 6 months to get there in a ship. Obviously not one of the current ones, but some of the upcoming technology, 6 months. Even then, that's a long time. 6 months, you can get to from New York to California in a few hours on a plane. And you're telling me it's going to take me 6 months? How long would it take you to get to the edge of the universe? If you ask a scientist, they'll tell you, 14 billion years. Well, if you're going light speed, maybe. But even then, that's not true. And why that's not true, I'm not going to go into specifics here. You can find those specifics yourself. For all intents and purposes, the size of the universe to you is infinite. And so you can't begin to fathom the amount of choices and combinations of molecules and organisms and planets and systems that are available to the universe. So you have to demean what it is to see something as infinite. It makes it less scary, you see, when you remove some of the meaning from these things. It's less scary to think that the universe might be infinite and eternal than to say something like 14 billion years. You can probably think of that number, right? You can picture 14 million or 14 billion in your head. It's 14 with, what is it, 9 zeros, 12 zeros, 12 zeros. But see, by doing that, you've lost the meaning of just the sheer magnitude that you'd be traveling across the system. And you might think to yourself, well, what the hell does that have to do with spirituality? I don't care about going out into space. I want to achieve some inner peace. I want to reach enlightenment. I want to meet the Buddha or Jesus or, be one with God, hang out in my mansion for eternity, whatever other thing world religions think will happen to you after they're gone. How do you know that's true? How do you know that's true? How do you know when you die you'll get 72 virgins or live in a golden mansion for eternity? Have you thought about any of these things? What it means to achieve those things? What it would be like when you reach this magical, mysterious goal that somebody has told you is real? And have you thought about the repercussions of what that will do to your very existence right now? Because, see, a lot of these systems give you these ultimate goals of what will happen when you attain enlightenment or reach heaven or whatever. Generally, by following somebody else's rules and not your own. Because, again, you're a slave. And what it does for you now is simply place you in bondage. You become a slave with invisible shackles. But see, these shackles are the most powerful shackles in the world, in the entire universe. Because these shackles live within your mind. And because they live within your mind, you feel like you're still free because you walk around and you go and do your job, you go on vacation, you listen to a podcast, do some reading, do some writing maybe if you're creative, do some art. You have the time to go and do yoga and do your meditations. But see, these shackles are shaping your worldview. You have no worldview. Your worldview is exactly what somebody else has told you, or some variation of it. There's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that grew up in Christian households, sometimes very strict Christian households. I grew up in a Christian household. Mine was not extremely strict. My parents were very loving, caring, and understanding, and cultivated creativity. But there were rules that were not to be broken. And of course, some of these rules make sense, right? And one example I love to talk to my kids about, and why I'm a little different in my parenting style with my children, is the common trope of touching a fire, right? So if you're a parent, I'm sure you've used this. You tell your children, please don't touch the hot stove. You'll burn your hand. And of course, you do this because you feel like that's the best thing for them, right? You don't want your children to get hurt. You don't want to take them to the hospital. You don't want them to be maimed, to be deformed by touching this hot stove. Their skin will get burned. Maybe they have to amputate a finger or something. You don't want this for your children. You want your children to be happy and healthy and move on and continue, because ultimately your drive is this drive of passing on your genes to the next generation. And of course, you don't think about these things. It's something that's innate to you. It's in your nature. But you might clothe it with things like love and care and compassion. But see, these are all concepts. These aren't reality. The reality is you want to pass on these genes. So you tell your kids, please don't touch the stove. You'll burn yourself. And chances are most children are very curious, because humans are very curious creatures. If we weren't curious creatures, we wouldn't have conquered every continent on this planet. We would have stayed in the grasslands of Africa or wherever you feel like we came from. We would have stayed in the Garden of Eden, not eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Is that such a bad thing? Is it such a good thing? So you tell your children this, and what do? Chances are they go and touch the hot stove. Now see, in your mind, you feel if they touch the hot stove, they're going to burn their hand, you might have to amputate it, go to the hospital, this and the other. That's kind of an extreme scenario. It's not reality, it's imagination. What's really going to happen is they're going to touch the stove, and because all organisms have a self-preservation mechanism, they're not going to keep their hand on the stove unless they have one of these syndromes where you don't have nerve endings or whatever. That is a thing. Maybe then they would keep their hand there. Okay, understandable. But for the most part, they'll touch it, realize it's hot, and immediately pull off. Now, will they get a blister? Sure. But what's the lesson learned? Now, that depends on the system of values that are instilled on this person. So the lesson learned for some might be, well, mom or dad told me not to touch the hot stove, and I touched it and I burned myself. So if my parent tells me don't do this, I shouldn't do it because it's going to hurt me. Seems very logical, but is it? Because oftentimes the best way to learn the lesson is to actually touch the fire. And see, this is where you have another segment of the population that will touch the fire and say, instead of saying, hey, mom and dad told me not to touch it, so when they tell me not to do something, I shouldn't do it, they might say, oh crap, I didn't listen, I burned my hand, there's a lesson there, maybe I should listen, but now I know. Now I know what it feels like to burn my hand, to have a blister. Now I know what that feels like. It's very different from somebody telling me, don't touch it because you'll burn yourself. I don't know what burn myself means. I've never burned myself before. And see, so now you've instilled in this person not simply a set of rules that keeps them chained to an ideology, but now you've taught them a framework for understanding reality. That's a huge difference. Now, of course, you don't have to agree. My parenting style is different from other people. And even my own parenting style has evolved over the years based on, you know, the things that I was raised with and things that I've learned on my own. And for me, it's more important to learn on my own than to simply follow the rules because it's in my best interest. Now, sometimes this, of course, can lead to some serious problems. Very serious problems. And sometimes the circumstances around somebody's life situation might lead them to probe things further than others. There are people that naturally get this like adrenaline rush from breaking the rules. That's possible. This is why we need to create a framework and not simply give rules. Rules don't fix any problems. They simply create more problems because people don't like to follow rules. Now, of course, they'll follow the rules to a certain extent out of self-preservation. And sometimes out of the stigma that comes from breaking the rules. But the important part is to give people a framework. That's why I'm always very conscious when I do this podcast, when I record an episode, not to tell anyone what to do or what not to do. When someone sends me an email asking me a question about a particular thing, how do I handle this particular experience? I never tell them what to do. I ask questions and allow the person to find their own answers. I try to steer in multiple directions because it's more important for me for that person to have free thought, not free will. I almost said free will, not free will, free thought. Free will is a topic that I do want to dive into. But I want that person to have free thought, to be able to make their own decisions and not base those decisions on something that I said, because who am I? I'm no different than anybody else listening to this podcast. I have gone through many of the same trials and troubles and tribulations that many people listening have. And of course, I've been fortunate enough that I've managed to come to some semblance of peace and understanding and be able to better create my framework to deal with these situations than some others. That's understandable. I understand that that's the reason why a lot of people listen. They like the things that I have to say and feel like I've gone through experiences that give me some kind of authority, and I put this in quotes. Because if you're a longtime listener, you know how I feel about authority. There is no authority. You're the ultimate authority. You are it. That's why I finish every single episode with that saying. You are it. You might be thinking, what does this have to do with silence? Why have you been gone for 3 months? And the reason is very simple. I needed to understand what it was like to live in silence. I needed to understand what it was like to create my own rules for my life. I needed to understand all the lessons that I've learned over the last several months and how they apply to me practically. Because see, spirituality isn't about finding enlightenment and becoming some kind of, whatever, rainbow spirit. That's all bullshit. It's all imagination. The reality, whether you want to believe it or not, is that you live in a body. And that body lives in a society. And if you choose to remain a part of the society, you need to learn how to live in that society as best as you can, abide by the rules as best as you can, while allowing yourself to not be bound by the ideology of that society. You need to do this regardless of what you deem society to be. Now, I'm talking about, for example, a national society, right? A country. Or maybe for you, even just thinking about it as a city or a state or a province or whatever. But I'm talking about a country. You have to learn to abide by those things. If for some reason, let's say I were to achieve full Buddhahood, okay, something I don't believe is possible, okay, I'll just flat out say it. I think that's a fallacy. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that I achieve Buddhahood, and I decide not to pay my taxes, and the taxman knocks at my door. What am I going to say to the taxman? Oh, sorry, I don't need to pay my taxes. I'm a Buddha now. Is that going to cut it? Because you're an enlightened being now, you don't have to pay your taxes? Is that what that means? Of course not. Because see, part of attaining this Buddhahood, and again, I'm using another word in quotes, because none of the words really have any meaning. And if you're a Buddhist, don't take this offense in any way. I'm using this as a concept to explain another concept. Unless I decide to go and live in the woods, which even then, I don't know, there's not much public land, and even then public land isn't quite public because you can still be kicked out. Most public land has like a 2-week term, right? So after 2 weeks, if they catch you there, they can make you leave because they don't want people living in the woods, right? People get by it because oftentimes Forest Service doesn't care, whatever. So people get by it. It's very easy to sneak around in the woods, especially a large segment of the woods. But for most part, this is an impossibility because most people don't have the skills necessary to live that life. You can, of course, learn those skills, but most people don't have those skills to begin with. So chances are, a lot of people go into the woods thinking it's going to be great. I'm going to meditate 24/7, reach enlightenment, and then what? And then nothing, because you don't go anywhere. You're stuck in the woods. So the main goal of spirituality isn't to find this ultimate spiritual achievement that'll get you nowhere. It's in learning how to apply the lessons learned to become a real person, a real human being, a true human being, a free human being, a free-thinking human being. And if you want to, a productive member of society. You don't have to. There's nothing saying you have to be productive. There's nothing saying you have to be a member of society. There's nothing saying you have to remain alive in any way, shape, or form, to have any relationships. Those are all choices you can make. But see, these are your choices to make. And when you live in chatter, 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 chatter all day long, you're not allowed to make these decisions for yourself. Because you simply continue going from one step to the next, to the next, to the next, living by other people's ideas of how you need to live your life. And oftentimes it takes that time where you trip and fall and you land flat on your face straight into this chest of treasure. That's what it takes. And, you know, this has been a really interesting journey for me because, you know, I started in particular this level, I guess you could say, of my journey 2 years ago. And I've talked about this experience many, many times on the podcast. I think if you go back to episode 50, I go quite at length. Not 100% specifics, but it gives you a very good idea of the experience that I had, a very mystical experience. And it's taken me 2 years and a lot of hurt and pain and a lot of falling down and falling down while I'm already on the ground to realize what this experience meant. And in many ways, the experience was rather prophetic. Now, of course, I'm not saying that to mean that I'm some kind of prophet either. Remember that. If I ever say those things, quit listening to this podcast, because that's dangerous. But prophetic in a sense that during this mystical experience, I was able to get in a state that allowed me to tap into that silence. Tap into that silence. Because see, once you start bringing your thoughts and your personal biases and your words into understanding what it means to be human, a full human, that's when you begin missing the point. And of course, that's not a bad thing. You have to trip. You have to trip. I'm not talking about mushrooms. You have to trip and fall, okay? You have to have that fall maybe 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times. I guarantee you, I've fallen 1,000,000 times in my life. But what is it that you do after, right? That's what matters. Do you fall and you say, crap, I fell. What am I going to do now? I'm so sad. My leg hurts because I tripped and fell. Or do you get up, suck it up, and keep going? You might keep going with a limp, and you might fall again in 3 steps. But guess what? Eventually, you'll know what to look for. You'll know where not to step. And you know which falls you have to take. Because you have to take them. You can't avoid them. You can't not touch the fire. You have to touch the fire. That's the only way you're going to learn. And so when I say that this experience is prophetic, it's because I got to this place And again, I can't call it anything but a mystical experience because that's the only word that I have. But in this experience, I knew where I would end up. And the place that I would end up was with nothing. And if you go back to listen to two episodes ago, to Hell and Back, you'll know what that means. At the beginning of this year, I was at zero. I was at zero. I left and I went to the woods and I stayed there for a couple days. And then I didn't even come home for weeks because I was at zero. And I lost everything. Now sure, I still had a house, I still had a car, I still had a wife, I still had kids, still had a family, still had people that listened to this podcast. But at that point in my life, none of it meant anything. I was at nothing. And had I continued going down this path of feeling sorry for myself, even through all the things that I talked about on this podcast, and all the things that I've learned since I began doing it, and all the things that I've experienced, and all the techniques that I've learned to do and I practice on a daily basis, even then, it was nothing. See, it's like this. You can go to the gym every day, right? Let's say you want to lose weight. You go to the gym every day. You go to the gym for 2 hours a day. Okay, I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to do an hour on the treadmill. I'm going to do 30 minutes of weights. I'm going to do 15 minutes in the sauna. And I'm going to do a 15-minute bike ride. And then I'm going to take a shower and go home. And it's going to be great. And I'm going to feel great. I'm going to sweat it out. And if I do it and I keep doing it, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to look great. I can have my beach bod. Okay. And that might be well and good. But what if you're eating, you know, a pizza every day? Pizza with bacon and sausage and stuff. Whole pizza, one sitting, every day. What's that going to do? It's going to do nothing, right? Because everything that you're losing during your extensive workout that you're so excited about, you're gaining by continuing bad habits. By eating this pizza full of bacon and whatever else you like on it. And see, if you had a piece of pizza after the gym, that might be good. It might give you incentive. If I do this 2-hour workout, I'll eat a piece of pizza afterwards. Now, the pizza's still not good for you, but it's definitely better to eat the one slice of pizza than to eat a full pizza, because now you're negating all the gains that you made. And see, that's what it's like when a lot of people perform these spiritual exercises, these routines, in whatever shape you want to do them. You have some ritual at your temple or church, you read your holy books, you do your meditation and your prayers, you know, maybe you go deep, you do some psychedelics too. Whatever you do, chanting. I've done a lot of experimenting over the last couple of months with whirling. I think it's fantastic. It's great meditation. Of course, inspired by the whirling dervishes. It's very tough, by the way. It took me weeks to not throw up after spinning for 30 seconds. But it's a fantastic technique. But again, it's only a technique, right? The map is not the territory. You can't just hope that if you keep adding practices and keep reading books and keep listening to people talk about how I can solve my problems, that you're going to fix anything. All you're doing is wasting your time, because you're learning all the ritual, all the practice, but you're not actually practicing. That's the difference. And how do you actually practice? You don't do anything. I know that sounds crazy. I've been talking about this for, you know, months now. This particular episode, you know, we've been going for 45 minutes, and we're at a point where I tell you that you're doing too much. You're doing too much. Because you feel like you have to do something, right? This is the way that our culture has shaped our mentality. How it has shaped these shackles that keep your mind from realizing your true potential, who you really are, which is all of it. You're the entire universe, right? You're the entire universe, and you don't even know it, because you feel like you're simply Martin, or dad, or husband, or employee, or manager, or podcaster, or artist, musician, whatever. Whatever label you apply to yourself, all those things keep you in shackles. You can be any of those things. How do you do it? You listen to the silence. And you don't do anything. You don't do anything. What this means is not that you go into the woods and meditate for hours on end, which I have done. I did an episode on it. It was an amazing experience. Highly recommend it. everyone should take at least a weekend out of the year and go into the woods and do nothing. Go find you a nice, safe spot. Okay? Pitch your tent. Sit in your tent for 2 days. Stare at the sky. You will learn more in those 2 days about yourself and about your place in the universe than in your entire life. Go try it. I guarantee you, the majority of you can't even do 10 minutes of sitting out and staring at nothingness. And you can't start there, but you got to start somewhere, right? So I've talked about other things. I've talked about this hand meditation that I do, which people laugh at. Some people have done it. They think it's amazing. Now, I didn't come up with this thing. This technique has been around for forever. It's not my technique. I found it by mistake. I tried it. It works great. What do you do from there? You build on it. So if I can stare at my hand and see the entire universe in it, think about what I can see by staring at the sky. Go try it. But you have to build. You have to build a foundation for you to get there. See, a lot of people fail and they keep listening to people on how to whatever. What are the hot topics on YouTube? 10 tips to lose weight. How do you find your true meaning? How do you find your life purpose? Who cares? So you can't find it because you're always looking for it. That's the problem. So quit looking for it. Because when you stop looking for it, then you're going to find it. See, that's what silence is. Silence isn't being a hermit. It's not taking a vow of celibacy or a vow of chastity, a vow of silence. It's not about living in a cave. It's not about becoming a monk or a nun or whatever, any other something, whatever. Okay? It's about being a rounded individual. That's what it is to be a shaman. That's what you want to be. You want to be a shaman. Shaman might go into the woods and live in loneliness. Or actually, let me rephrase that. Live alone, not in loneliness. Because a true shaman is never lonely. They might be alone because you're the only person there, but they're not lonely. Because see, they know that around them is all of existence. So you can't be alone if everything is around you. But you have to realize that, right? So they're alone, not lonely. But they still partake in society. Okay, they come back into town, they provide their services. Because they learn things that people that decide to remain in shackles don't know or don't care to know or don't care to realize. They provide services in return. They get something out of it. They might get companionship, maybe get songs, music, some food, maybe some materials to repair their home, maybe some livestock in return for, you know, doing some medicine work or doing some ritual or praying for somebody, whatever it might be. Be a shaman. That's what you want to do. Be a shaman. That's how you become a whole individual. Because see, people like that, they don't care. They don't care about the specifics of, you know, who's president, what's happening in Congress, what's going on in China, is my crypto down, are my investments down, is my car broke down, how am I going to fix it? You don't care about any of these things, you see. Because if you need something, the universe will provide it for you. That's not happening because you don't believe in it. That's not happening because you don't believe in it. And I didn't believe this until 2021. Again, I grew up in a Christian household, right? So I'm told you got to pray. You pray, you ask for things, God will provide. Sounds nice. What does it mean? It means nothing. Until you actually experience it, you see. But the problem is you're not taught how to do it. You're simply saying, hey, ask God for something. God will give it to you. That's not how it works. God doesn't give a crap about you. God doesn't give a crap about you. And the reason is because you don't give a crap about yourself. That's the honest truth. You know, that saying goes, God will only help those who help themselves, right? That's a famous Christian saying. It's mildly true. Mildly true. Of course, it implies that, you know, you have to follow rules that God will deem or, you know, put you in his favor. And that's because it makes us as humans feel better to know, hey, we have this personal relationship with God. God created us. God's looking out for us. There's nothing that makes you special. You're not special. You're not better than this delicious can of seltzer water that I'm drinking. I'm no different than this can of water. As a matter of fact, let me take a sip of it. You're no different than that can. And see, if you get upset by that, it's because you don't understand and you feel like you are. You feel like you're entitled to something. That's why you're a slave. You live in FOMO because you think you're more important than this can of water. or more important than your dog or your neighbor or whoever. And that's not true. Now, it is true that God will only help those who help themselves. And how that happens is by realizing the intricate connection that you have to all the things around you, not just the people around you, but to your home, to your neighborhood, to your state, to your country, to your planet, to a deer, to the birds out on the trees, to the squirrels. Okay, this is where you get into the hippy-dippy territory, right? Everything's one. You guys know, if you listen for a while, I hate using that term because it's become so generic, so meaningless. Doesn't mean it's not true, but we've demeaned it. It is true. All is one because all is all. If God is all, then all things around you are a part of God. And all you need to do is ask once you realize that is the case. See, that's no longer imagination. When you start thinking of God as a man in the sky, that's imagination. When you feel like God created man on the seventh day or whatever, sixth day, because you know, that's the ultimate part of creation. That's imagination. When you feel like if you follow all the rules and be a good little boy, a good little girl, God's going to listen to you. You got it wrong. That's imagination. And why is that? And the answer is very simple. You have to wonder about the ultimate nature of godness. And the ultimate nature of that is pure unconditional love. I did a full episode on unconditional love. Go check that out. It might be a topic we need to revisit. See, pure unconditional love, again, this might seem like another hippy-dippy thing, but it's a love so pure, it has no judgments. Has no judgments. So God loves you just as much as God loves Hitler or Saddam Hussein, or Jeffrey Dahmer, or the little squirrel that goes up and down the tree in front of my window every day, just as much. Now, that'll make some of you angry. That's fine. You can be angry at that. But then you haven't realized the fullness of love, the fullness of God. There are no extremes with God. God doesn't get angry and punish people and destroy cities. If you're a bad person, God doesn't come out and you know, shoot you some lightning and you, whatever, you burn to death. It doesn't happen. That has never happened. But what you do need to do is learn to listen to that silence. That's where God lies. God lies in the silence. Because in the silence, you go beyond these extremes. You go beyond the imagination. You go beyond your thoughts. The thoughts are what's clouding you from realizing any of these things and keeping you in shackles. It's all in the silence. And again, I'm not going to reiterate this realization that I had. Go back and listen to that episode, to Hell and Back, two episodes ago. I'm not going to go back into it. But since then, all my decisions come from silence, from non-action, from not getting in the way of myself. Because you see, it's simple. If you're presented with a choice, right? Some choices are easy. Do I wear blue jeans today or khakis? That's an easy choice. Or rather, you think it's an easy choice. In terms of the mental energy required for you to make that decision, it's actually a tremendous amount of energy. So you have people like, for example, Steve Jobs, who have removed that choice. They only own blue jeans and black turtlenecks. And so when they wake up in the morning, they don't think about, what am I going to wear? Jeans or khakis? The answer's already there. I go to my closet and I pick a shirt and a pair of pants. Because all my shirts are the same, all my pants are the same. Now, this might seem silly to you, and of course, for some, it might be like, ooh, that seems kind of culty, right? Because a lot of cults, they'll you know, start wearing all the same clothes, same shoes, whatever. It might seem a little culty. Again, that's imagination, right? Because ultimately, there's nothing good or evil about wearing a pair of jeans and a black turtleneck every day. Or, you know, those pair of Nikes that Nike quit wearing after Heaven's Gate did their suicide pact. There's nothing inherently evil about the shoes, but they had to quit making them. Why? Because everyone associated that particular model of shoe with this suicide. But see, there's something to it. You remove that choice from yourself. Now, this is when we start getting into some of this free will thing, right? Some people are already seeing it. Oh boy, here we go. We're not doing free will today. But you remove that choice. And so now that energy is no longer wasted on you making that decision of what do I wear today? So people do this with food. I'm sure carnivores love this, right? Because they don't have to think about what they eat ever. I'm going to eat a steak today. That's what I'm eating. For breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. Some of you are salivating. You love steak. Oh, that sounds like a dream. Maybe. To me, it's irrelevant. It's imagination. It's not concrete. It's not reality, right? And it's an experience mired by words. And of course, that leads us to talk about experience, because oftentimes we get bogged down by experience. We feel like it's so great to accumulate experience. Experience is a magical word nowadays. It's got power. It's got meaning. Right? You don't go on vacation. You go on the, you know, overseas experience. Check out the marketing speak that's used on some of these places. And generally, it's places that do very well. Why is that? Because they've tapped into this magic of words, you see. Words are magic. But how much power they have, just like any other magic, is how much you give them. Are you giving those words power? And you give these things power with your thought. And so how do you quit giving up your authority and quit giving other things power? Is you remove the thought. Now, this is extremely difficult. For some of you, you're thinking about this. You say, that's impossible. It is impossible for me not to think. And you get a gold star today because you're 100% correct. It is impossible for you not to think. Well, Martin, you just told me I need to stop thinking to get this, to learn to listen to the silence. I got to stop thinking, but you're telling me I can't stop thinking. So what am I going to do? I'm stuck in the plate. See? That's exactly what I'm talking about. You've got this FOMO mentality. You've got this FOMO mentality. You listen to the podcast to get some insight into how to fix your life, and you don't have the framework. So if I tell you a conflicting statement like this, you get lost. You get anxious. Because all you're thinking about is the thought in your head. You're living in imagination. And we do this all the time. This is why people think that, you know, if you do some magical ritual, whatever you do in your magical ritual will come true. Yes, that's true, but not in the way you think. You're not going to say hocus pocus and, you know, turn a quarter into $1 million. That's not how it works. And the reason it doesn't work that way is because that thing is not isolated from the entire system. The entire system works as one. There is only one thing. That one thing is God. Very simple. If you quit working against that thing by instilling your own will into it, by instilling your own thoughts, by shaping what you feel is the best outcome for yourself, when you quit doing that, that's how you live in silence. That's how God listens. That's how God, in a sense, you could say, does what you ask. But see, that thing has to be according to that God will, that ultimate will. If you say, I hate all Muslims, I wish they'd all die, that's never going to happen. Why is that? Very simple. Muslims are a part of God, just like you're a part of God. Okay? And if you're a Muslim, maybe you hate Christians, right? Maybe you're a Jew and you hate Palestinians. I wish all the Palestinians would die. Never going to happen. Never going to happen. Because all these things work in a system. Now, if for some reason something were to disappear, right? We've had extinctions throughout human history or, you know, throughout the Earth's history. Extinctions happen. Martin, you just said, if I wish something to be true, it'll never happen. Well, what if rodents wish dinosaurs no longer existed? And then that happened. All right, now you're thinking too much. You see, you're mining yourself in imagination. Number one, rodents weren't thinking, oh, I wish I would quit getting eaten by dinosaurs. I wish they'd all die. And then asteroid shows up and kills them all. That's not what happened. It's just one of these things that happened because that's the way the universe evolves. At some point, it was bound to happen here or somewhere else. And I'm sure it's happened in other planets many, many times. So that's what it means to be in silence. You learn to float down river, as the Taoists would say. You lay down in the river, you stretch out your arms and legs, and you just let go. That's what it is to be in silence. It doesn't mean that you stay home and draw unemployment. that you don't get a job, that you disregard your family, disregard your friends. That's not what it means. It means to live your life according to the nature of the flow of the universe. And how you find what that flow is, what it means, how you can tap into it, that's not something that can be taught. If it could be taught, then everybody would already have it. And if everybody already had it, there wouldn't be thousands of podcasts and thousands of YouTubers and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of videos and books and thousands of prophets over human history instilling their own ideas. See, whether you like it or not, chances are most of us will never get to a place of this realization. This sounds like a really crappy thing to say, Martin. I'm trying to find some sort of enlightenment, and you're telling me I'm never going to get it. I am telling you that because that's the truth. And it doesn't mean that I have it either. See, religious and groups and cults and all this ideology arises because people tell you, if you follow these rules, you're going to get to this magical fairyland and live happily ever after. And that's not the reality of things. If you want to continue buying into somebody else's bullshit, then continue doing so. If you really want to do work and figure it out, then you need to keep this in mind. Most people don't get to a place in their lives that realize the nature of existence, that realize anywhere near close to what it means to be a human. How do you feel like you're going to figure out all of existence if you don't know who you are? Have you ever thought about this? You probably haven't. And I know many people have, because we've had philosophy for thousands of years. Now, these successful philosophers aren't successful because they sit and think all day long about how to fix a problem, right? You think about that thinking man statue. People that figure these things out don't do that. They don't withdraw and sit and think all day. Because all you're doing then is wasting all your energy into imagination, into thinking of what ifs. The way for you to find the answer is for you to not think about it, for you to not waste your energy. You already have plenty of things to waste your energy on. Don't waste it on this. The way it comes to you is you find your framework, you see what works, what doesn't, and if something works now and it doesn't work in 5 years, then you apply that to your framework. You don't say, this is bullshit, I learned this thing last time I did it and now it's not working that way, so this must be false, that's not the way it works. You have to constantly evolve your framework. That's what it means to be human. That's what it means to find enlightenment. To constantly adjust your worldview and take in more and more input for your framework, to expand your framework so you can better understand all of infinity. See? That's how that works. And in order to quit wasting your energy on thought and bullshit and things that don't have any meaning whatsoever in your life, you quit thinking about them. You quit thinking about them. Because here's what happens. When you quit thinking about something, it doesn't disappear. It doesn't disappear. Remember, the universe is infinite. God is infinite. All things happen at the same time. Okay? There's no time, there's no space. Everything happens at one point at the same time. Now, we don't experience the world that way because we're very finite creatures. But when you have something that is all of existence, has been around in terms of your existence forever, and probably will continue to exist that way forever, your measly 70 years, let's say, 80 years, whatever the typical lifespan of a human is nothing. It's insignificant. It is a blip of a blip of a blip of a blip of a nanosecond. It is nothing. So your place in existence is literally a point, and that's it. So quit wasting your time trying to figure out how you're going to determine what all this stuff means, because you'll never find it. If it has taken 14 billion years for the universe to get to a place to create you who knows nothing about anything, why do you feel like that's going to change in the next 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 years? It's not going to change. But see, if you sit in silence, you lay in the grass, and you quit worrying about the chitter-chatter of the universe, that's when you begin to listen, when you begin to learn, when you begin to understand. because you can tap into this vast, infinite wealth of knowledge and experience that has come before you. You don't have the energy to tap into that. So quit wasting the energy you have for your menial things in your life and just trust the universe. Trust God. And that's kind of some of the things that I've learned over my last 100 days of silence, is to truly let go and learn what it is to be me, what it is to exist in existence. And by no means does it mean that I've learned the final lesson. I hope that there's many more lessons to come. But it's certainly guided me in a place where I feel very content with my life. I've found a great job. Some of the issues around this place that I began working at have worked themselves out. The person that hired me was actually embezzling from the company. He was removed before I got there. I got a new person working above me who's fantastic, and we get along great. There were some other things going on in this place that weren't necessarily healthy. Those things have magically taken care of themselves with no input from me. Bought a new car, got my wife a new car, did a bunch of work around the house. My bills are all paid. I don't have to worry about any of that. I make the same amount of money this year as I did last year. And somehow I have, 30% of my paycheck just sitting in savings every single month. How? I don't know, because I'm not making any more money. And surely if you pay attention to world economics, you know that things aren't getting cheaper. But somehow that's working. And everything's fine. Everything's fine, you see. Because though the world is a mess, everything's fine, right? That's the Anthony DeMello quote. I love it. Go read that book. Awareness. Incredible book. For some of you, it may change your life. For some of you, it might put you in a path where you can change your life. But ultimately, that's up to you. All right, let's wrap this up here. I don't want to go much longer for this one. But I want to thank you all for listening. If you have come back to the podcast because I have a new episode, then welcome back. If you've never heard the podcast before, go check out the episodes, thealchemicalmind.com. You can, of course, email me, martin@thealchemicalmind. And I've gotten a lot of emails this year, by the way. So I know I've basically replied to most of them by now. I have quite a few, and I don't like to spend a lot of time in email. So I've replied to most people that have sent me an email this year. If I have not, then I'll be getting to it shortly. But thank you all for your patience and for your concern. I know a lot of people were concerned. Where are you? There was one person that said, "Oh my God, I found your podcast on this episode, and now you're not doing any more episodes. What's going on?" So to that, I will say this. Don't rely on what I say on this podcast to inform your decisions on things. I want this to be a place where I can share my personal experience. And if it helps you in any way, by all means, but don't copy or imitate the things that I do and say for finding my own way in the universe. Carve out your own path. But again, if it helps, then by all means. I'm going to continue doing the podcast. I'm at a place in my own personal and professional life where I can certainly carve out the time once again to continue doing this. So I expect the podcast to return to a weekly schedule. So I think probably on Fridays is when I'll be releasing episodes from now on. So keep an eye on that. Again, thealchemicalmind.com. You can find me on Twitter @mindalchemical. I am still active on there, even if it seems like maybe I haven't posted. It doesn't mean that I don't check it every once in a while. And it doesn't mean that I don't know what's going on with some of you that have been, I would consider have become acquaintances of mine, and enjoy talking to you very much. So don't think I'm ignoring those either. Again, just because I haven't been in the world doesn't mean I'm not still a part of it. And I hope you enjoy the episode and get in touch. Of course, as always, remember that you are it. But remember that you are all of it. Thanks for listening.